for it to hear me?
Fine.
Okay, good. So I'll probably walk around and test. Can you hear me? Hear me in the back? Good.
Zom?
It is. Test.
You got it?
I don't know. I'm talking, but I kind of hear echoes. There we go. Okay. I'll just talk loud. So as Father Ben said, my name is Hannah Milani. I am the Director of Faith Formation and Evangelization and Youth Ministry primarily in Virginia, Minnesota. But I did not grow up here, so I'm going to just start off with a little bit of background of where I grew up and then move into like a dovetailed topic tonight. So I grew up in the state of Maine. I grew up playing in the sand and making sandcastles, playing frisbee out on my side of my street, kind of normal childhood. Grew up in a family of five. We were a mass-going, Jesus-loving Catholic family. And the two things that I want to really highlight about my childhood are primarily how my mother and my father have shaped my interior life and my spiritual life. And they've done that in very different ways, but it kind of shows the complementarity and the beauty, I think, of marriage in that. So my mother is like a Mother Teresa service worker. She is the coffee and person. She is the go-to person for volunteering. And so I learned through her how to serve. And my father, a much more quiet guy who would not get up and talk after mass or serve coffee and or talk to people if he had the choice, was a much more quiet and reserved person. So I learned how to pray from him. I learned devotion to the saints. I learned a great love for our mother Mary through my father. And I think the greatest skill, he's a great craftsman and a woodworker with his hands, but I think the greatest thing that I ever learned from him was how to safely pray a rosary in the car with a finger thumb-like rosary. He showed me how to do that, and I think that's one of the greatest takeaways from my father. So that's just a little background of where I grew up and where I am. So let's get to where we are now and why I'm in Minnesota. So tonight's topic, I'm going to be talking about surrender, and then dovetailing that with how marriage, death, our careers, and my college have shaped and transformed my confession kind of conversion. And they're very applicable, I think, to all of us at every stage in our life. So let's get started. So four different times that I experienced surrender. The first time was when I was 18. I knew by the age of 17 what I wanted to do with my life, and I actually followed through with that, and I'm actually doing that now, which is uncharacteristic, to say the least, of our generation, I think. But I knew that I wanted to help youth encounter Christ, and I knew that I wanted to study theology. And let me travel back one step to explain that. When I painted this picture of my childhood, it was beautiful. But there was one piece that was missing to the picture, and that was having a relationship with Christ. So I knew my prayers, I knew my rosary, and I had these devotions to the saints, and I learned service, but I didn't have that personal encounter with Christ. So that was something that I was seeking, and that's something that's going to follow this story. So I knew that I wanted to study theology, and I thought that going to a four-year Catholic college would give me that. I thought that I would encounter Christ there. And I definitely encountered, I learned a host of things, like moral theology, biblical theology, apologetics and such, but it was what happened outside of the classroom that really shaped my future. So they had mass three times a day at our school. I went to school down in Florida. Ave Maria University was the name of the college. Private Catholic college, about 1,000 kids there. You had 7 to 10 priests on campus at any given point, and 24/7 adoration all day, every day of the week. So that was a beautiful gift. So it was what I did outside of the classroom that really helped form that relationship that was just starting with Christ. So the surrender part came in when I knew that I wanted to go to college. I had put a year's deposit down to a school, had no nobody there, no none of the teachers, had never visited it, and just went and just said, like, this is what God wants me to do. He wants me to study theology, and the money has come, so this is what I'm going to do. So looking back on those 4 years, I would do it again in a heartbeat. It was a very positive experience, authentic relationships built there, and it seemed like this trusting God and surrendering to God thing is pretty simple, you know, it's pretty easy. So that was the first moment of surrender when I was about 18. And the second one comes in when I was 20. So April 13th, I said yes to marry my dear husband. He had picked me up after I was babysitting, probably very sweaty, probably had paint on me, and probably had some crayons in my pockets, and he picked me up, and we got a smoothie, and then we went on a rosary walk to a grotto that had Our Lady of Guadalupe there. And we were praying the rosary, and by the fifth decade, we had gotten to the grotto, and he had told me to close my eyes, and then I had this weird thing I was holding in my hand, and I realized it was flowers, and then he had gotten down, he says, will you marry me? And I said, yes. Another very seemingly easy surrender, and there was a lot of excitement and joy around that surrender. So that was numero dos. That was when I was about 20. My third one comes in the last year. So when I was 21, so Josh and I got married in January, this year technically, January 7th. And we had been married for just about a month. And as Father Ben had mentioned, I'm a huge Patriots fan, which I know makes some of your skin crawl because you're Vikings fans. And I haven't found many people that like the Patriots up here. But it was the Patriots and the Falcons that were playing. It was Super Bowl Sunday. And I came upon this crippling pain that I had never felt before. It was in my abdomen. So we ended up spending our Super Bowl Sunday in the emergency room and in the hospital. And there was three things that the nurses and the doctors had said to us, kind of all in one sentence, all at once. The first thing was that we were pregnant. The second was that the baby was in my tubes. So it was an ectopic pregnancy. The third was that we were gonna lose the baby and that I was probably gonna lose half of my reproductive organs and that I had to have surgery. So like those four things were kind of all thrown into one sentence. So you don't even have the joy and the excitement of realizing that, oh my goodness, there's life within us, but like you know that it's like you're hurting baby and baby's hurting you. And so it was a very gray month. And a very difficult way to start off a marriage. But I remember being gowned up and I had my, those gorgeous gowns that they give you at the hospital. And I was ready to go into surgery. And there was three things that I wanted to surrender to God in that moment. And I was just kind of giving over to him. I said, if the baby isn't gonna make it, I give that to you. Like if the baby is not meant to live and it's, the pregnancy isn't going to be viable, then I surrender that to you. Like the plan for our marriage and for our family, I've already surrendered to you. So I give you that. The second thing was the prospects of having to lose half of my reproductive organs and the future of potentially being struggling with infertility. And thirdly, probably the deepest desire at that point was surrendering to God. One of the greatest desires that to be a mother and to longing to have children. And I said, I give this to you. Whatever your plan is, it's better than what I can ever come up with. So it's yours. And we went into surgery. Coming out of it, we actually received great news that they didn't. The baby had miscarried. Well, it wasn't great news, but the baby had miscarried on its own, and I was able to keep everything that I have. God, praise God. But and that it wasn't something that would probably happen in the future. So those were the two things that we were told. And that it was still possible, obviously, to have children. So that was probably not the easiest moment of surrender, because it wasn't filled with this joyful anticipation like the engagement had, or the excitement and adventure of going away to school and spending 4 years in Florida. It was a much more, like I said, kind of gray and solemn surrender, which sometimes our prayers can be. So the fourth moment of surrender was the most recent, and it was just this past summer, and I was finishing up school. I have, for those of you who have been in school recently, I had 18 credits left, and I was doing them in 8 weeks, which was a lot of work. And my final week, it was finals week, finishing papers, doing it all online, I had gotten a call from Father Brandon, and he said, hey, do you want to come to San Diego with me for a week, and we'll just go hang out with kids, and it'll be like your interview for the job. And I was like, well, if I've learned anything so far, I wanted youth to encounter Christ, I wanted to do ministry, I love service, but I also had finals. But I just said yes, and said it would all take care of itself, and like it always has, it did. And I was able to do both. So I went to California for that week, and we did mission work with the youth, and we got to go to a Steubenville retreat, for those that know what the Steubenville retreats. But they're just a powerful weekend of, encounter with Christ for our young people. But I think even more so, I learned that this was a powerful opportunity for the adults that were there, and especially for myself, as I was discerning working with these youth. So that was a very blessed time, and I think I took away a lot more than even the youth might have, because they taught me so much, which is sometimes often the case, that you think that you go into it as teacher, you go into it as minister, but really you're receiving so much more. So that was the third moment of surrender. And I think what I want to talk about next, so I want to share how these moments of surrender have shaped my conversion story, or my confession, like how I approached the sacrament of confession, because that's why we're all here tonight. So to start, I said a little bit about my experience at Ave Maria University, which was the college I went to. So there was mass that was offered there 3 times a week. So there's this incredible opportunity for grace, and it's almost so easy to be a Catholic at that point, because, like I said, you have a 7:30 Mass, you have a noon Mass, and you have a 5 o'clock Mass, and you're basically slapping God in the face if you say, I'm not going to all three of those Masses because I'm too busy. So you feel very drawn and very, just like magnetic pull to go to Mass, and that was something that springboarded me into going to adoration more, and praying the rosary, and going to Bible studies, and et cetera. It kind of just overflowed my life. So. Also, Ave Maria taught me how to go to confession well. One of my favorite stories, I'll save that for the marriage one. I'll save a story of my husband that will make you all giggle. So Ave really had this formation in this space that was different than just, it was my parents' faith. It was now Hannah Cusack's at the time faith, and I was choosing to go to confession regularly, and I was choosing to go to Mass, so I made it an I thing, not a my family thing. Marriage also has made me a monthly confession goer, because you really have no other option. Like, you realize how weak you are, how much you fail, and all of your shortcomings, because there's this other person mirroring all of your actions. And it's like, it's probably the same with children, you have a little child that's mirroring this, but there's no other way that I would have gotten through this last year so grace-filled without the sacrament of confession so regularly. And the one story that I wanted to share is how Josh has been the best accountability partner to me in confession, and I think that's so important that we have that person that encourages us to go and is that kind of just driving force to help us get there sometimes. And he's always encouraging me to be like, just go to the priest that you have the best relationship with, because like it's going to, you're going to have like grace multiplied, and like go face to face and just like encounter like the person of Christ through our priest. Or also the story that I wanted to share is that I joke with him that he was the best priest finder at school, because he just knew. We had a priest that lived in our men's dorm, and he would say, okay, he even taught other kids how to find priests if he needed to go to confession. So we'd start by knocking on the door of a priest, got up Father Bob, who chose to be in the dorm with 50, I don't know even how many men lived there. And if he didn't answer there, then you look downstairs, you see his bike is there, his bike isn't there, it's he's probably at the academic building. If his car isn't there, he's off campus, so you're gonna have to find somebody else. Then look at his schedule for school and like see if he's in classes. So he was an excellent priest finder, which I admire about him. So not many people can say that. So anyway, funny story. But marriage has definitely helped turn my attention to the sacrament of confession all the more. And thirdly, this year has been, before this year, like I still have all, I have my whole immediate family that's still living and present with me. I have my grandparents that are still alive, all four of them, God love them. So I really hadn't encountered death. So the first death that I really had to encounter was the death of our child, which was the story in itself that I had kind of already explained. But there's also just been some young deaths in our diocese this year that have, they just shake you, they make you realize that when 16-year-old girls, we had an 18-year-old girl that just passed away in Virginia from a terrific snowmobile accident, you just realize that you're just not guaranteed time. And it makes you just want to run to confession all the more, because you realize how important it is, I believe. So that was the third example, was in death. And then finally, within our own professions and our own careers, we are naturally going to be better people, better Christians, better Catholics, if we are actively and habitually going to confession, because we are going to be more compassionate and merciful towards the people that we work with. We are going to be more humbled, because that's just the nature of going to the sacrament, that we are humbled, and so that we'd be able to reciprocate that humility. And also, we all need this grace, right? Regardless of what our profession is, whether we're minors, whether we are social workers, whether we're moms, whether we are lawyers, youth ministers, priests, we all just need this, right? So I want to end on this note that regardless of what our career is or what our state in life is that we all can run to confession tonight. And it's not like, I'm here because mom told me that, oh, it's been, you know, 6 months and it's Advent and it's time for me to go to confession, or you feel even that weight and like your conscience is saying you really have to be here, but it's because you want to encounter the living and eternal Father. You want to encounter God and surrender yourself to Him. So that is my invitation and the note I want to close on. So thank you.